So good evening, everyone. I wonder, many of you perhaps are wondering, what is this HARP measurement doing in a dark matter session? Whether HARP has some dark matter results to show up? Not the case. I couldn't be here on Tuesday, and the organization was nice enough to move the talk. So I wanted to thank them very much for that. So I will present our first results on the HARP, which is the measurement of the pion yields for a replica target of the K2K experiment. The HARP experiment at CERN was a hadron production experiment based on a large angle and large acceptance spectrometer. This spectrometer was based in a TPC, a set of large drift chambers, and a number of particle identification detectors. It was a moderately small collaboration with around 100 physicists and 24 institutes. It is still. The physics goals of the experiments were the input for precise calculation of atmospheric neutrino flux, input for prediction of neutrino fluxes for the Miniboon and K2K experiment, pion and kaon yields for the design of the proton driver of neutrino factories and SPL-based superbeams, input for Monte Carlo generators. The, we took data with beam energies that range from 2 to 15 GeV and targets that range from hydrogen to lead. This specific analysis that I'm discussing today has a motivation on the K2K, on the calculation of the K2K Fermi-Yau ratio. So this is customary lore in neutrino physics. One of the best known things on the trade is that you could scale, you love that your detectors could see the neutrino source as a point-like, because in that case, everything could scale nicely as 1 over r squared, and this thing unfortunately never happens. So if you want to do a disappearance experiment and you want to predict the flux that you expect in a far detector from the flux that you measure on the near detector, what you need is a correction factor, extrapolation factor, which is a function of the energy. Since what you are looking is an effect which is energy dependent, you better measure this thing carefully. This is the Fermi-Yau ratio for the K2K experiment in the first phase of the experiment. It is clearly a nonlinear thing. It departs from the linear behavior that you would expect for 1 over r squared. And this is what you need to do carefully. So how do you compute the Fermi-Yau ratio? Essentially, you produce your neutrino beam by hitting with protons your target, then sending those protons through a set of magnetic lenses to focus them, letting them decay, and then here you go with your neutrino beam. So what you need to do to compute this flux is either you compute or you now the knowledge of the pion yields from proton nuclear interactions at the proton energy or the proton driver energies and for the corresponding target material. And then you need to compute also the transport function that transform the pion yields into finally neutrinos. One part is relatively easy. This is the transport functions that you could do with a Monte Carlo that describes well the magnetic horns and the decays. The other part is the hardest part. The way is done in K2K is this blank transparency that I can show you. But the way it's done currently in K2K is using a pion monitor that allows the measurement of the pion fluxes for pion momentum above 2 GeV, but it is insensitive for pion momentum below 1 GeV. So that means that in the low energy part where you expect the peak of the oscillation to be, you have to rely on extrapolation from a Monte Carlo model that fits the high energy part. So in that sense, this is uncomfortable because in this particular part, you don't have data. So how could HARP improve on that? Well, let me show you to start with the angular and momentum range relevant for this analysis. This is the neutrino spectrum measured at the near detector, the full neutrino spectrum, and these are the momentum and the angle in milliradians of the proton that originated this spectrum, of the pions that originated this spectrum, so that you can see that most of the cross-section is concentrated at high momentum and relatively low angle. In particular, if you go to the beam of energy where the oscillation peak is expected and farther above, you see that the pions are always above 1 GeV and below 250 milliradians or so. So this is telling you that you're interested in this particular range of momentum and angular coverage, which in particular also implies that in NOMAD, in HARP, you are implying the forward part of the spectrometer. This range will be covered by the NOMAD, reduced NOMAD large drift chambers, the forward detectors, PAD detectors, and this is what we call forward analysis because it involves the forward part of the spectrometer. This is the acceptance, in fact, that we are having for our spectrometer. We define as accepted a particle that can reach the second module of the drift chambers. So our basic definition of acceptance is basically telling you what is our window through the magnet. So you can see here what is our window in Y. In Y we have an acceptance which is flat up to 50 milliradians or so, and then it goes down and it's gone by 100 milliradians. So we have large acceptance on the X projection, fortunately. And in the X projection, we have an acceptance that is flat up to 200 milliradians, and we have some acceptance up to 300. So the good region for us is basically between 200 and minus 200, and for why we use the fact that these things should be rotational invariant. In momentum, we have also a rather good acceptance. At 1 GeV, we have an acceptance already of 80%, and then it rises up to be flat very quickly. So this is why HARP is well suited to do this particular measurement. And now let me you quickly describe what is the spectrometer starting from the beam. Before the beam gets to the spectrometer itself, it sees a set of beam instrumentation detectors that will tell us the beam composition and direction. So there is two Cherenkov, and there is a set of scintillator planes that will provide time of flight. They are well separated. And then there is a set of microwires chambers that will give us the direction. So three examples of this instrumentation. In this particular case, what you are seeing is by using the wire chambers, we can project exactly in our target the incoming beam, and then we can measure in the spectrometer the events in which we have at least one pion. So by doing the ratio of the two, we can see exactly the shadow of the target that we were using. In this particular case, that was the miniboom target, and you can see exactly the shape of the target projected by the wire chambers. The beam Cherenkov allows us K-on-pion separation at high energy. This is an example at 12.9 GeV, which is the energy relevant for K2K. And the beam TOF allows us K-on-pion proton separation at low energies, and besides provides us with the initial time of the interaction. The main detector for this measurement are the so-called NOMAD drift chambers. So these are a set of very large drift chambers, about 3 by 3 meters. They were arranged in HARP in sets of modules of 12 chambers, 12 planes each. Now, these modules were arranged, one module before the magnet, another one before after the magnet, three of them after the Cherenkov, and some of them after the TOF. The chambers, with respect to the performance in NOMAD, we had the drawback that we have a smaller heat reconstruction efficiency as compared with 95% in NOMAD because we were forced by safety regulations to use a non-flammable gas. So here you can see typically the efficiency of the modules. These are the central modules, these three ones, and these are the lateral modules, those over here which have a smaller heat efficiency. To use these guys, you need to go through a rather painful, but at the end of the day, successful alignment procedure. So you can see here that with cosmic rays, you just go through iterations where you keep rotating and rotating the chambers by software until at the end of the day, you hit the resolution, the point resolution, which we were using, which is of the order of 350 microns. We have also a TPC, and the TPC is not essential for the analysis except for the vertex constraint. But the TPC is also getting in shape with already a good resolution. There is one of the major problems that we had on the TPC, which was the existence of the crosstalk, is being corrected. We're getting already DEDX into the apparatus, and some physics is starting to be looked at. For pion proton separation, we use TOF at low energies. So TOF, you can see here an example of the performance of our time of flight wall, which is a resolution which is about 160 picoseconds. At low momentum, we can separate very well pion from protons. And even at high momentum, we manage to separate using overlaps among the different counters, pions and kaons, as you can see here. The range of electron identification between 3 and 15 GeV, we have particle identification with the Cherenkov, in which we are able to see for sure electrons and pions above 3 GeV. Kaons come in at about 9 GeV, and protons only show up at about 15 GeV. So here you have two examples of the performance of the Cherenkov. At low momentum, you can see the pion and electron peak. You can see the inefficiency of the pions because we are still in this region where we are not very efficient. While at high energy, you can see that there is almost no pion inefficiency, and we can see very clearly the pions, there is no electrons in this particular beam. For the calorimeters, unfortunately, there is another failure here. I cannot show you the separation, but we have a spaghetti calorimeter, which basically can give you a good performance on E and electron pion separation. I hope those guys keep not showing, not popping up. Oops. Okay. So with all these elements on the apparatus, we want to compute the cross section. This is what we want to do. So the cross section, let me write it first in this form, in which the beams I and J runs over P and theta momentum. Theta is the polar angle. There is a normalization which is not strictly needed for this because we can normalize to the flux in K to K. A migration matrix that describes this resolution detector effects, total efficiency, and the pion yield, that is the raw pion yield that we measure, that has to be corrected by background. As a matter of fact, what we really measure, I mean, the way we really formulate this thing is a slightly more involved way, in which those beams run over momentum and theta. We have the acceptance, the tracking efficiency, and we sum over three different type of tracks the efficiency. I will describe this type of tracks in a second. And to correct the pion yield, we just simply compute by a pion correction factor that is nothing but the ratio between the pion purity and the pion efficiency. It's a simpler way of doing things. Tracking efficiency. Tracking efficiency for us is the product of two different efficiencies. The efficiencies to go through the magnet and the efficiency to reconstruct segments down the magnet. This is the way we compute the efficiency to reconstruct segments down the magnet. We use data. We start from a given segment that we have on the in one module, project this segment to this second module, check whether there should be a track here counting hits. It should be a track because there's a number of hits there. This thing goes to the denominator, and if we find a segment, it goes to the numerator. So doing this, we can compute, using the redundancy of the modules, the efficiency of every module. And then by simple probabilistic combinatorial, we compute the efficiency of the downstream efficiency, which is the convolution of all of them. Here you can see the acceptance and the efficiency of the modules in terms of the variables x2 and theta2, which are nothing but the x and theta projections. We don't know yet at this level what is the momentum and theta, so we just use the projections on the planes. So you can see the acceptance of one of the modules, which is just covering the left part of the spectrometer, the other guy, which is covering the right part of the spectrometer, and the central module, which is overlapping. When you compute the overall down module efficiency, what you are doing is overlapping the three of them. And you can see this is the acceptance. As for the efficiency, this is the module number 2, if you want the central module, and this is module number 5, which is again the central module, while these are the modules laterally. Those efficiencies, these are the good news, we compute with data, and we check they are very nicely flat. So it allows us, in fact, to transform the variables x2 and theta x2, which are the projections on the drift chambers, to p and theta, because essentially this efficiency depends on nobody. So we end up with a downstream tracking efficiency, which is flat, high, and almost 100%. So this is not a problem for us. The problem, if you want, the more complicated part is the up-down matching efficiency, how we manage to track one track segment to the vertex. And here, the good news is that when we run the Monte Carlo that we need here to understand what we do, and we run the data, we find out that between the data and the Monte Carlo, there is a simple scale factor. The behavior of the Monte Carlo and the data are identical in shape, and the Monte Carlo slightly over-evaluates the efficiency, but we can use the data simply to correct, so we compute the correction factor here. And with this correction factor, in fact, we can do this for different types of tracks. This is the total efficiency that we have. This is the efficiency that we have for tracks which are perfectly reconstructed and for tracks which are not so perfectly reconstructed. That was one of the Planck transparencies that I couldn't describe. We used two Monte Carlos. In fact, we used several sets of Monte Carlo to check that the predictions are not Monte Carlo dependent. And at the end of the day, we end up with this total tracking efficiency, which is basically something in which our dependency of the Monte Carlo is minimized absolutely. So this is the total tracking efficiency, and this is the tracking efficiency for the different sets of tracks. Okay, this is as a function of theta. For particle identification, we just simply use the Bayer's theorem to just use the fact that the probability of something being a pion given a set of measurements can be deconvoluted, because every probability, we have a set of different detectors, each one independent from the other. So we compute the probability of something being a pion having been measured, the variable lambda, which is proportional to m squared in the TOF, having been measured the number of photoelectrons in the Cherenkov, or having measured the energy in the electromagnetic calorimeter in the two models of the electromagnetic calorimeters. So if you want, these plots are nothing but the probability functions for a given energy, and we have this probability functions for all the energies. So using that, we can compute basically the pion efficiency and pion purity. This is done with beam particles, and this is done for three different energies, 1.5, 3, and 5 GeV. So these are the efficiencies, these are the purity, and dividing one by the other, you compute the pion correction factor. With all this in hand, we are able, therefore, to compute pion yields already. So this is the raw pion yield that comes from the spectrometer, and notice that I have suppressed this zero angle. At zero angles, we still need to understand exactly our triggering, our contamination from beam particles, and also the saturation effects that we have for thin targets, so it's not yet there. A part of the theta equal to zero, we have our efficiency in terms of the momentum on theta x. Here is the raw yield, this is the background prediction. This is once you have performed PID, once you have correct for efficiency, and once you have corrected for acceptance. So you have, you see how the momentum distribution for our pion yields look like. So basically from our first report in Morillon, what we have now as a progress is that we have improved our tracking efficiency. Basically, if there is one track segment downstream the magnet, we are able to track it. And by we now deconvolute the calculation of the tracking efficiency in this downstream tracking efficiency and up-down efficiency. This we can compute with data. This we compute using the combination of data in Monte Carlo. At the end of the day, we have a robust calculation of the tracking efficiency. We think also we have a robust PID. So what is missing to end up to just complete this analysis is basically not much. We just need to compute now the data deconvolution, the migration matrix that takes into account the resolution function of the detector. This is a relatively straightforward but a bit involved procedure. There is the empty target subtraction, and we want to understand the theta equal to zero region for sure. This will complete the calculation of the pion yields for the thin target that gives us the primary interaction, and then we go through the calculation of the pion yields for the exact replica target, and also the measurement of the absolute cross-section that requires the normalization. I want to insist that this is a first resource available from HARP. Our measurement, which the measurement that is needed to improve the calculation of the Fourier ratio in K2K is coming. And a similar analysis that is not described in this occasion but will be described soon is also going on for Miniboon. And these are just two of the many measurements relevant for neutrino physics that will be provided by HARP in the near future. I think I would like to use a couple of minutes to give you a quick summary of what is going on in MIP. This I was asked to do that. So I will only mention, it's not very large, very long, I will just mention that MIP is somehow a complementary experiment to HARP, which is about to start in Fermilab using the 120 GeV main injector primary proton beam, and it will, the central detector, equally that HARP is a TPC, But in this case, the TPC is not, it's also, it's reversed with respect to the Hub direction, so it can track particles in all the polar angles. Basically, this is what MIP looks like. You have a TPC within a dipole magnet, Cherenkov in a TOF exactly like HARP, but then after that you have a second dipole, drift chambers, and a ridge. So the difference between, one of the difference between MIP and HARP is that MIP wants to cover a much larger range of energies that goes all the way up from 5 GeV to 100 some GeV, including the measurement of the Minos target. They have a good particle ID, as this plot shows, where you can see kaon proton and pi kaon separation all the way up to many tens of GeV for the primary, for the secondary particles. And they have good tracking thanks to a TPC, which is well understood because it's reused from a previous hadron production experiment. So in principle, this is a very nice hadron production experiment, which, as HARP, is intended to provide a number of surface measurements, including atmospheric neutrinos, measurement of targets like Minos, and also wants to do some nuclear and particle physics. As it is mentioned here, it is quite complementary to HARP. So this is what I wanted to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Okay, we have time for questions or comments about this talk. Well, I guess maybe everybody's tired. Sure, there's no questions? Okay, if not, let's thank the speaker again.